The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth, seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kulpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I'm going to apologize in advance for not knowing what I'm talking about. But I'll give it a go anyway. Dogen says to look inward, and that's directly along the road that leads to the mind. So this is about looking inward. The mind that looks at itself is the mind that can put an end to suffering. And the mind that looks outside is the mind that creates suffering. And we've grown up in a society where everything is really directed externally. You need cars and houses and things and computers and music to listen to and all sorts of stuff. And one partner usually isn't enough. And we're very much directed towards external things. And even in religion, there's a sense that, like with the scripture of Avalokiteshvara, sometimes people get the impression from that there's some sort of savior that's going to help you out of difficulties. And Reverend Master Jiyu has translated one of those lines really quite eloquently by saying, if bound in chains in prison, let a man just think on Kanzian, great holy power, at once the shackles will then set him free. Because you don't have to get out of the situation, you just have to go into the situation. The situation is not the source of the suffering, and it's not the source of the solution. It's this subtle little turning inward, which is really about religious conversion. It's converting where we place our attention, where we look for solutions to our problems. The refuge in Buddhism is this internal refuge. Even the refuge of the Sangha is learning to see what you can learn from other Sangha members. That looking for refuge is not something that you lack already. You have whatever you need. In the first part of the Sharangama, the Buddha is asking Ananda, where is the mind? And Ananda comes up with 10 different places for the mind to be. Of course, Ananda's talking about the intellectual mind. Buddha's talking about the mind with a capital M, which is the one that Dogen is referring to. And really, it has no location because it's within all of us. Where Master Chushin has this lovely hymn where he says, it fills and contains all things. And that's the Buddha mind. It fills and contains all things. It just is. It doesn't have a location. It doesn't have a place. But we don't find it until we turn inward, until we start looking at ourselves. It's the mind that looks at the mind that frees yourself from suffering. And it doesn't have to be comfortable. In fact, you probably don't really look for it until it gets uncomfortable. And we can use that uncomfortableness. When people were dying from AIDS in the 80s and the 90s, and they hadn't gotten the drugs they have now, I spent a good deal of time with people who had cancer and AIDS. And one day I walked in, and my friend John was lying in his bed, which he did every day. And I said, well, how are things today, John? He said, well, I had a new pain. And I said, well, what did you do with it? And he said, I explored it. And there was something in my heart that's kind of leapt for joy that, wow, what a wonderful teaching that is. That instead of just running to the bathroom for more pain medication, he was going to just sit there and be with that pain and see what it can teach him, see what he could learn from that. And there's a lovely story about Achan Cha, who in Thailand, there's a cultural fear of ghosts and the death, and they have these open graveyards where people come and get cremated, or they used to get just taken apart by the birds, and the animals would come and rip the bodies apart and eat them. And these were a place of great fear. And Achan Cha had been a monk for quite a while and realized that he really hadn't dealt with this fear. And there's a story about his visit to the graveyard. As dusk was falling, his mind was screaming, don't be ridiculous, don't do this, it's no good for your samadhi, be reasonable, maybe you can do this later, next year when you've got your practice more together. But he willed himself to stay and set up his camping place. Once he put up the mosquito net, he went in and just sat there. There had been a cremation of a young child that day. During the funeral, Achan Cha was fine since everybody was around. When everyone left and he was there on his own, his biography contains a long description of the first night that was filled with lurid images and account of sheer willpower he needed to get through to the next day. Achan Cha was so afraid he just locked himself in one spot. When dawn came, he said to himself, ah, great, I've done it. I've done my cremation thing, I'm off. You know that kind of reaction. I've done my bit, okay, I'm qualified now. I've done with my suffering. I don't have to do that anymore. Please, can I go now, sir? But Achan Cha realized, no. That's not transcending the fear, it's just enduring it. I haven't got through to this at all. I'm still absolutely terrified. I can give myself the excuse that I don't have to do it, but the terror is still there in front of me. I'm determined to get through this. He was really pleased that he was going to stay on, and then he thought, at least there isn't going to be another burning. But sure enough, an adult died that second day, so Achan Cha stayed there through the cremation, and then again, everybody left. All he had to do to protect himself was his practice and his mosquito net. Now, you might not think that a mosquito net provides very much protection, but any of you who've camped out in the Himalayas, Yosemite, or some other place where there are dangerous wild animals know that the thinnest little layer of netting or plastic can make you feel protected. Grizzly bears, ha, no problem. Grizzly smishlies, they're easy. I found this out for myself when I was camping in the middle of a forest in Abayagiri last year, where we've had bears and some mountain lions. This is Achan Amaro talking now. I was camped by this little creek way off in the woods, a mile and a half away from everyone else, fasting for a few days and living off the water from the stream. For the first couple of days, every leaf and twig that dropped from the trees was the equivalent of at least three bears and a mountain lion. Every time. When night fell, the animals tripled in number. After a few days, I got used to this, but believe me, having the mosquito net set up with a candle inside made me feel like I was in Fort Knox. No problem. Put the candle out and it gets a little bit harder. Then lift the mosquito net and you've got a 360-degree vision. Achan Cha said that my mosquito net felt like a fortress circled with seven concentric walls. Even the presence of my alms bowl was reassuring. He made the resolution to sit there and to be with his feelings, knowing that this is the best way to get through the fear. The night before, as he had sat locked in place, there had been the than the usual animal noises, crickets going off all night long, leaves and twigs dropping from the trees. These were nothing special, just familiar sounds. On the second night, things changed. He was sitting there around midnight when he thought he heard footsteps. When you live in the forest, you get to know what animals make what kinds of sounds. You know the difference between deer and bear sounds. Lizards and snakes make very distinct sounds. Achan Chao was sitting there thinking, I hear footsteps. It's not an animal. It's a two-footed creature. And the person is coming from the fire. So he said to himself, don't be ridiculous. It's not one of the villagers. Maybe it's just one of the villagers coming out to see if I'm all right. Maybe they've come to offer me something. And if they do, they will come up and say hello. Nevertheless, he was determined to just sit there with his eyes closed. Then he heard these footsteps thump, 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 getting closer and closer. He started to tighten up. The sweat poured out of him, and he told himself, oh, don't panic. It's just one of the villagers with heavy steps. In his mind's eye, he could see the charred body. He could see the skeleton, the guts hanging out, the scorched bits of flesh hanging off, skin and eyes dropping down the cheek, half-burned mouth. As he felt this rank mess of flesh walking towards him, he told himself, don't believe it. It's just your imagination. Stop. Be still. Concentrate. Let go of the fear. In the meantime, the footsteps were getting closer and closer. Then he heard the steps going around and around him, thump, 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 circle around him again. And again, by this time he was in a state of white-hot fear. He had gone beyond anxiety. His body was locked solid and sweating bullets. He was absolutely rigid. Then its presence came and stood right in front of him. Achan Chai was still determined to keep his eyes closed, not even a peek. At this point, he was so completely fear-stricken, it burst. The fear stream was going at an absolute full force when suddenly he had the thought, all these years I've been reciting, the body is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, perceptions are impermanent. The body is not self, feelings are not self, perceptions are not self, mental formations are not self, consciousness is not self. So, he wasn't just afraid. He was very concentrated and very alert. The insight flashed into his consciousness. Even if this is some terrible ghoulish monster that's going to attack me, all that it can attack is that which is not me. All that it can harm is the body, the feelings, the perceptions, the mental formations, the consciousness. That's the only stuff that it can get damaged, and that's not me, that's not self. That which knows all of this cannot be touched. That's the crucial part. That which knows that cannot be touched. And instantly the feelings of terror evaporated. It was like switching on a light. It disappeared completely and he went into an incredibly blissful state. We went straight from total dukkha, suffering, pain and incandescent fear to an extraordinary bliss. His mind was alert. As that happened, he heard the footsteps thump, 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 getting fainter. Eventually the footsteps disappeared. He never found out their source. Well, it doesn't have to be comfortable. And it doesn't have to be easy. Our society is based on everything being comfortable and everything being easy. And that just creates a lot more suffering. Chalanatha over here, his mantra that we do every evening is, by our own wills and vigilance, may we our fetters cut away. May we within the temple of our own hearts dwell amidst the myriad mountains. Will is usually thought of as willpower, power over something. That's what Achan Chao was trying that. First night is just all the time in his tent. There's just the willpower to force himself to stay there. I was reading the Lakavatara Sutra, and it had a Sanskrit word which is translated as will, is manas, M-A-N-A-S, and it's actually means to reason, reflect, and consider. And it's not this forcing our will on something. It's this ability to have some insight into the problem, which is what happened to Ajahn Chah when he was sitting there in his Fort Knox mosquito net. And it takes a certain amount of determination just to sit there, but that turning inward is what looks at this capital M mind. The second chapter in the Sharangama is about awareness, which is what this capital M mind is about. And it's not something we have to get, we already have it. There's a lovely interchange with King Prachanajit and the Buddha where the king is asking the Buddha, says, these other teachers all tell me that after death nothing survives, there's nothing left. And nirvana is just this emptiness. So the Buddha's trying to get him to understand a little bit about awareness. And he said, well, Your Majesty, how do you know you're going to die? And he said, well, I'm 62. I'm not the man I used to be. And every year things get a little bit, I get a little bit weaker and a little bit more wrinkled and a little bit older and more creaky. And so the Buddha said, well, how about your awareness? He said, has that changed any? He says, when's the first time you saw the river Ganges? And he said, oh, my blessed mother took me there when I was only 3. So we're on our way to see the festival for the goddess Jiva. And he said, when I saw that river, I knew that it was the river Ganges. And he said, well, when's the next time you saw it? He said, oh, when I was 13. And how did it look? Oh, it looked the same. And he says, today, I'm 62, it looks the same. Hasn't changed. And the Buddhist points out that which doesn't change is that which doesn't die. And our awareness is this thing that doesn't change. And we don't have to add something to our awareness. We have to take something from in front of it, take it off. Because our awareness is usually through this filter of self, of what I like and what I don't like, and what I think is good, what I want to have, whether it's comfortable or not comfortable, whether I can complain about it or whatever. And it's letting that stuff drop away. Letting the fear drop away, letting the anger drop away, letting our ideas and opinions, our likes and our dislikes, that all of that stuff has to drop away, because that's the filter we put on this pure awareness. And looking inward is the mind there that sees the mind, is the mind that sees all of those things, that sees that we're doing this, that which understands the error is not itself an error. That awareness of our greeds, our fears, our angers, our opinions is that mind with a capital M. And we have to be able to see where we have our judgments and fears and desires and let them go. Just don't hold on to them. It's the clinging to those things that causes the suffering. It's not the fact that those things exist. It's the fact that we hold on to them so fiercely. And Ajahn Chah was fiercely holding on to his willpower here and realized ultimately that, that he's got nothing to protect. But you don't know that until you're in the midst of that place where fear comes up. You can't leap beyond fear when you're sitting there comfortably watching your TV and a glass of something cold in one hand, and it's all very comfortable and nice and warm and pleasant, and you're all distracted with some entertainment. You leap beyond fear when the footsteps turn out to be the mountain lion or the bear. There was another story about a monk in Thailand who was sitting there, and they're giving a Dharma talk in the middle of the night, and this group of monks was hearing this slithering coming towards them. And it turned out to be a really huge snake. And it came right up to this monk that was sitting there and hissed in his face. And he reached over and said, "Oh, thank you for coming to my Dharma talk." And he started petting this snake. And then the snake went over to some other younger monk who hissed and was sitting there like, "Go away, go away." I'm not sure where I would be with a fierce snake looking me in the face, but I'd do my best to thank him. That willingness to look, to consider, reflect, what is it that gets afraid? What is it that you're trying to protect? What is there that you're holding on to that creates this suffering? Because until you can actually see that, you can't let it go. And that's what Ajahn Chah was doing. And you may not be comfortable. There's a story of Empty Cloud, Su Yung, who had been training for many years, and over 30 years, and he was invited to go to this monastery to help with a meditation retreat that somebody had donated the money for. And he gets down to the river, and he didn't have the 6 coins to pay for the boatman. And he's walking along the river, and he falls in. And he spent the entire day and the next night floating on this river, and finally got picked up by a fisherman's net, dragged ashore. He was a real mess, and he was bleeding from every orifice, and was in very bad shape. And the abbot of he got taken because of his monk's robes. He got taken to the monastery, and when he was able to regain consciousness or whatever, they sent him to the monastery that he was headed for. But he was in pretty bad shape. And the abbot asked him if he wouldn't, without realizing what had happened to him, he asked him if he wouldn't take a position in this for this meditation retreat. And he respectfully said that he didn't think he could do that. He refused to do that. And in this particular monastery, one of the cardinal rules is that you can't refuse the request of the abbot. And so he was found to be guilty of this offense, and he was beaten for it. And he hadn't bothered to tell people what he had just been through. But he did ask if he could stay for the meditation. And after about 20 days, the illness stopped, and he recovered. And it was then that things started opening up for him. And at one point he had this vision of light that he could see right through the walls, and saw a man peeing in the bushes there, and another person in the lavatory. And the next day he checked with him and said, "Were you really out there doing this?" And they said yes. And the next night he was offered a cup of tea, and the boiling hot water got spilled on his hands, and the teacup dropped. And that was the moment that he had his big breakthrough into deep understanding, where he said the mind just cleared and he was at peace. And it's the accepting of the situation that allows things to change. Reverend Master Jiyu is about to walk out of Sojiji because these guys were just too ridiculous. And there was prejudice, there was not enough food, there was ridiculous conditions. The training was designed for, you know, the 20-year-old young Japanese men, and she was a 38-year-old, 40-year-old Western woman. And but she got to the gate, and she said, "I could be wrong." It was that just that little moment. This is the will reflecting on what is actually going to help you. And if you hadn't come, what you got? She hadn't gotten what she came for, so she turned around and she went back. And that's when things started to open up for her. And that's that subtle little twist, you know, "I want out of here." It's just too ridiculous. It's too hard, it's too difficult. And something shifts, and that's that turning inward. That ability to see that you're not through with this. It's like Achan Chag staying there the second night, you know, being, realizing that he had forced through his willpower to stay there, but he hadn't actually dealt with what he was trying to do. And that's that turning inward is what allows the will to reflect, to consider, to reason, well, what is there to be afraid of here? What do I have to get out of? Is it going to be any better if I leave this monastery and go somewhere else? I mean, where can you go where you don't take yourself? You can't get rid of your fears by going to some other place. You can't get rid of your desires. You just have to learn to live with those things. And this is what exploring this pain is about. Being willing to take a look at the things that are difficult, the desires, the judgments, all of those things. But you have to be able to look at them without judgment. That's the mind that looks at the mind. That's that which understands the error is not itself an error. So if you can look at those things and see them for what they are, well, that's just desire, that's just fear. That comes with the program. But you can change your relationship to those things. It's not that you get rid of them, but you just don't have to take them seriously. It's Achan Chah realized that there is nothing here that could be hurt. The body can be damaged, but there's another great story too about another one of his disciples who was in India, and Master Hua, who had given the Abhayagiri Monastery the property on which they built their temple there, was giving a talk, and he didn't know that this man was going to India, but he just said in the talk that if you get to the land of the Buddha, then have no aversion for anybody. And this kind of stuck in this man's mind because he was going to India. And when he got to India, he kept this as a mantra. And so I'll read you that story too. The monk and his lay companion were traveling through the forested countryside between Nalanda and Rajgir. And lo and behold, they met up with a group of surly-looking men who had been cutting trees in the forest. We know about those guys. They all had axes and staves of wood. It was a very lonely area, and this group immediately surrounded them. They wanted to take all their things. So the layman, who has been with the monk, trying to be protective, started fighting with the men. After getting knocked around, the layman ran off, and a couple of robbers ran after him. This left four of them alone with the monk. They made it obvious that they were going to kill him. Because the monk spoke a little Hindi, he was able to understand what they were saying. Also, the head bandit was brandishing the axe over his head. The situation looked pretty unambiguous. Then suddenly the thought flashed through his mind. When you go to practice in the place of the Buddha, do not find fault with anyone for any reason. He realized, if this is what's happening, I can't escape. I'm not going to fight these people, and if I did, they would win anyway. So I'll just give myself to them. He then bowed his head, put his hands together, and started chanting the Namo Tassa. He stood calmly waiting for the axe to fall, but nothing happened. He looked up and saw that the man holding the axe over his head couldn't bring it down. Then the monk got a bit cheeky, and he went like this. But again, the bandit couldn't bring himself to harm him. At this point, the layman who had been hiding realized, hey, wait a minute, I'm supposed to be protecting this monk. I'm not doing my job. And he ran back and tried to help out. They had another scuffle. The lay person realized that he was in real danger again and ran off some more. He hid in the bushes at the bottom of the scree. As it turned out, the bandits took all their things. The monk was left with his lower robe and his sandals, and everything else went. But within a couple of days, they managed to get some more stuff to replace it, most of which better than what they had lost. But that's just like what the Kanzian scripture is talking about. That when you realize that you've got nothing to protect, then just start chanting, or start meditating, start just... He was saying afterwards that if he's going to die, at least he'd die with the thought of the Buddha in his mind. And the lay person who was with him said, I would be have the thought of like a frightened animal running from a bigger animal. And that willingness, just at that moment, that turning within, rather than thinking that your protection is in somehow fighting these people or getting rid of this problem, is just accepting the situation. And this is again what River Master did in Japan, just turned around. I could be wrong. I could realize that, wait, I've got something to learn here. And the same with whatever is going on. The situation is not the source of the suffering. It is just... You know, the thing that helped me most was River Master asking me one day, he says, to do this 100-page report that she wanted it done in 24 hours. And I just said yes. It was such a ridiculous situation. I wasn't going to sit there and arguing with him. But of course, it took a lot longer than that because I started having things open up and... So I didn't even get to that within 24 hours. But I was actually doing what she really wanted anyway. But that's that, just that turning around and saying yes to this situation, just like the monk, remembering, oh, this is such a situation where I need to just accept. And that acceptance is that turning around. That acceptance is that willingness to look, well, what can I do here? I'm faced with an impossible situation. And I just say yes to that. It is impossible. Now what can I do? Well, you can do something about yourself. You can start looking at where there's room there. And Ajahn Chah found that room and realizing that all the things that he'd been chanting for years applied to this fear. And River Master realized that she had to go back. She hadn't gotten what she came for. And it wasn't going to be any better to leave the monastery. And this is turning inward, recognizing that the situation or the conditions don't have to change in order for you to be at peace. And that's the going to that pure awareness that exists within all of us. Not demanding that the situation be better or different, not demanding more sleep or more food or more this or less that or whatever, but just turning inward and realizing that the real refuge is already there. And all we have to do is look in the right place.